Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episodes. The Cues stands for questions, and the News stands for itself, the whole word, news.
That's right to the point. Breaking news. All kinds of news. We are happy to be here. We're going to get to all those news, all those cues. But before we do that, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know what's next. A little bit later, we're going to have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But that's not all, Joseph.
No, there's still more. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books and other pop culture books, they are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, Inner Jedi Journal. It is going to be out in early January, and you can get 2022 set off great by just trying to be a Jedi, just writing down your Jedi intentions in your Inner Jedi Journal, which I'm already thinking about, I'm happy about, and stressed out about. So if you'd like to join me in that journey, you can use this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
use it, use that journal. I think, you know, it's perfect time to start something new, or maybe I'll do that myself there. Wonderful stuff. We love the folks at Inside Editions, time to catch up. And this is a big catch up. I was pretty much on a plane getting on about 2 hours ago or so. we're really catching up at the time of the recording here. But I've been out of the loop, Joseph. How's your life adventures and Star Wars adventures been?
Oh, my life and my Star Wars adventures have been good. It is a busy time. It is a weird time. It's a difficult time in the world. Obviously, people listening know that, but I did have some joyful moments, which were really good. I got to see Spider-Man No Way Home at the Grauman's. It's no longer called Grauman's, but I always call it Grauman's. Yeah, I love that theater in my imagination. It will always be that magical, faraway place that I saw in photos as a child. That's where people lined up in the 70s to see Star Wars. Yeah. Apparently, there's footprints. And now it is a theater that I walk to. But man, I know this is our Star Wars podcast. I'm sure we have overlap with the MCU, but it felt like a Star Wars adventure because I haven't had this experience in a while, Ken. It was like Force Awakens. It was like Endgame. It was like Black Panther. No spoilers about the film, but there's things in that film that people are very excited about. And to just be, everybody was masked. I felt, you know, relatively safe, as one can, but I didn't take my mask off at all. But just the eruption of joy in the strange noises that came out of a large audience of just joy. And for me, everything that's in the film, again, no spoilers, is it works totally as its own moment, but it's also, you know, building on people's love of the character of Spider-Man, the history of it. It was just so joyful to be in that moment. It felt like the same kind of reaction in the theater is, you know, Han Solo saying we're home and popping on, or the, you know, reveal of the Falcon, that kind of thing.
Love that.
Yeah. That's awesome. So that was just an incredibly joyful moment. I laughed, I cheered, I cried for real at Spider-Man. So that was a nice life adventure. And then for Star Wars, we went out and talked with a friend for a while after seeing the film. And then we walked home and we passed a Dunkin' Donuts on Hollywood Boulevard that has a huge Boba Fett poster above it. So I tweeted about this, but it looks like Boba Fett has staked his claim along with Fennec Shand to that specific Dunkin' Donuts. His blaster is like pointing at the doorway of like, are you sure you want to come in here? you got to respect me if you're going to walk into this Dunkin' and Donuts. It was delightful to see in the wild that Boba Fett poster, and even more delightful that it was over the very incongruous Dunkin' Donuts.
Well, yeah, and we got Boba Fett in 2021, soon 2022 on a poster. I mean, gosh.
Yeah, right?
Wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I can't even imagine. I'm not even going to speculate how else we would see that. It's just beautiful that it's there. And I stood there for a long time. I took many photos of it. It was very cold, and my wife and I just stood there staring at Boba Fett for a few minutes. So that was a great Star Wars adventure.
Yeah, Left for Dead and at Dunkin' Donuts.
Left for Dead on the floor of Dunkin' Donuts.
And I know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you about your adventures.
Yeah, well, I was going to say I was traveling out in Washington, D.C. in December. I was expecting it to be really cold. The first 2 days, L.A. was colder. So that's when you mentioned that. And we, you know, when you say you're cold, I believe you. You got, you know, Minnesota blood in you there. You know, I trust your appraisal of cold. But yeah, a lot of fun. I was out in Washington, D.C. opening up for Mark Ellis at the Comedy Loft. And like you said, without a doubt, it can be, you know, it's a weird time. And we are trying to be as careful and cautious as we could out there, but also trying to, you know, make a living and find that balance.
Yeah.
And so the crowds were a little smaller, a little intimate, but you know, as being a longtime performer, Joseph, sometimes I can just open up a connection that's not there during larger crowds. So we gave it our all. We gave full sets. We weren't just mucking about doing, you know, jazz comedy, trying to figure out some bits and looking at our notes. We did our show, you know, we did a show. We had a lot of fun. And I had the chance to meet several Force Center fans, which always means a lot. You know, Joseph and I have done a lot of different things in this town and industries and different areas of one entertainment career. We you might know us from different things, but it's always something special when you're out in the wild and someone says, "Hey, I'm a Four Center patron supporter. I'm a Four Center listener." And I want to shout out a few. We had Drew was there. We had hung out there. Anthony and his wife Elise. So nice. And Anthony actually, inspired by what we do here, Joseph has started his own podcast, The Force Aww. Ghost Conversations, and a great talk with both of them. And Elise was paid some really nice compliments to us, Joseph, that, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's hard to take compliments. You got to learn. She's just some real things. But also she's one of the not I want to say first people like this doesn't exist. But she's like, I can't wait for Bad Batch season two.
All right.
We started to have a conversation about that, and she is, whereas Anthony is like the Star Wars fan, and she's like a Star Wars fan, that kind of situation. She's like, no, that one, that's the chemistry of that cast, even though it's pretty much one man doing most of it. She goes, the characters, I just was pulled in by that. So we had a great conversation about that. There was also Brandon and Allie. Brandon, a patron supporter, I talked to that lovely couple on the first night. And then I think it was the second or the third night was Matt and his wife, Megan. And Matt was, we had some great conversations about powering through the negativity the last couple of years. Mm. And just kind of calling the timeline on your Twitter feeds, just the struggle, but sticking with the joy. So Matt, it was a wonderful conversation out there. And I wanted to shout out those folks. It meant a lot to come see comedy, number one, but two, it even meant more to have Star Wars conversations with good friends we've made through Force Center, you know?
Oh, that is great. Thank you. I'm glad that you had a good weekend of fun comedy, and I thank you for bringing back the kind words from the Four Center listeners. That's so awesome. Awesome to hear somebody specifically excited for Bad Batch, because you know, we both really love that, and I always like it when people let us know that they were inspired or encouraged or supported to start a podcast of their own, you know, because it is, we so want to encourage, like, that we try to analyze Star Wars, but often it does just come down to opinions. What do you like? What do you think? And to hear other people getting their voices out there is so awesome.
Yeah. So good. So good. And I did get, it's my second time in DC, but this, you know, is five, including travel days. It was supposed to be six, but a delay, five days, which is, you know, you feel like you're moving to a town, and got to actually spend some time in the town. And me being kind of one of those kind of weird history buff kind of folks, finally did like the monuments and did that walk, and did about 2 hours every morning going around to the places and really spend some time there. And you know, not to get too far down the path, but like we always say there's light and darkness in all of us, and there's light and darkness in the history of this country, and I'm always open and honest about that too. And but I was moved by a lot of what I was just feeling, and just kind of, I walked past the Vietnam Memorial, and there was a large group of Vietnam veterans coming out to hang wreaths for the holidays, and it was kind of moving in its own way. And I was just kind of in my head about a lot of things, Joseph, and I had my headphones in listening to music, and all of a sudden, as I'm just kind of around the Constitution Pond there, near the Lincoln Memorial, Yoda's theme comes on. And I always call Yoda's theme kind of a theme of enlightenment, a theme of comfort and home and guidance and mentorship and reflection and pondering. It's just one of the more delightful themes, one of my favorites. And I just was moved by, here we go again. Here comes Star Wars. When you need it, it just pops in to add some extra enlightenment and comfort. And it was a great thing. So thanks, John Williams. Thanks, Yoda.
Yeah, that is a nice, beautiful moment. I agree with you about Yoda's music. It's got this sort of serene, take a deep breath, that we're going to figure out a way through this wonderful quality to it. And then the fact that you're hearing this in front of Lincoln is just, I can't help but imagine Luke plopping down and going, I can't, Lincoln's too big. And Yoda being like, all right, I'll show you, and just floating the whole big statue.
Yeah, love it. So it was a great time out there. Shout out again to everyone who took the time to come out and support, and also took the time from their schedule to shake my hand and or fist bump in some cases talk Star Wars. So a lot of fun. But from there, we are going to get to Star Wars news. As always, we put the caveat out here that a TV spot or nine may drop by the time this episode airs, but we're pretty confident. Joseph, we got a, it's another week, another Boba Fett TV spot. And we love that. We love that there's a lot of little things. So let's talk the latest one, Joseph. Authority.
Ooh.
About 30 seconds long. Had some new footage. So, Joseph, of the five extra seconds that were new, what were your favorites?
Oh, man, there are two bits that I love that were just that mostly a little bit more context. I liked it when the Twi'lek was in Jabba's palace. You really clearly saw the Rancor Grate.
Yes.
Bowing down and saying something about the mayor. And
yes,
just getting that picture. And this is, I'm excited about Star Wars and politics, Ken. That's what I'm saying. But I think that that's the nature of what they're setting up with Boba Fett. If he's trying to take over running this criminal organization and holding scary business meetings, like what is the power infrastructure? Did somebody declare themselves mayor of Mos Eisley, mayor of all of Tatooine?
Yeah, right.
They just said, president's not a good word, or chancellor. I'm going to be mayor. Or is that, you know, somebody's first name? Is that Authorian? Because we got a clip of another prominent Twi'lek sort of leaning in to whisper to the Authorian. So I got really excited by the word mayor.
Yeah. That's my spot, too, because of what that might mean. And then also, and I literally, as we're getting ready to record, I was doing a Google search just to make sure this hasn't been revealed. I was convinced, and I think that might be 50% accuracy there. I was convinced that the Twi'lek talking about the mayor was character actor, improv legend David Pasquese, you know, Groundhog Day, Veep, Strangers with Candy. It's not like Jennifer Beals was revealed and suddenly like was like, yeah, that's her. I kept looking. I was like, was it him? Is it him? If you're all of Veep fans, maybe not familiar with the name, he played Selena Meyer's ex-husband. Julie's character. And he's been around. I mean, if you see him, you know, he's been around everything. And I just like, I was in my hotel room on my phone replaying that 50 times. It's got his nose. It's got a little bit of the way his mouth talks when he's doing like a funny character bit. I don't know. So I loved everything about that as well, that sequence.
I can't wait. Yeah, in the rest of the sequence is the other thing of like Boba saying, I keep your eye on that one, and Fennec saying, I keep my eye on everyone, which just further cements what we've been seeing in these other trailers of Boba Fett's the one of like, yeah, you know what? I think we can change the way this works. And Fennec Shand being, everyone's going to try to shoot you in the back. So great. I guess that's my job then.
Well, on that, that was a great moment, and we love even more and more Fennec. He says Boba Fett trusts now I'm quoting them to work on their own self interest. I believe is what he said there. And I was fascinated by this in conjunction with what you're talking about Fennec going, we're gonna watch everybody. We've been speculating about, hey, is Boba Fett here to unite the underworld, a little respect or a new way of doing it, or is he just gonna let them destroy each other and rise to an even higher level of power? I don't know. And that got me just intrigued, you know?
Yeah.
Little insight.
Yeah, I think that he is going to try to unite the underworld because it is the thing that actually makes common sense if they think level-headedly. But I think the criminal world is going to give in to all of their greed, all of their petty anger and selfishness, all the standard dark side checklist. And then it will be let them destroy each other time. That's what I'm really hoping for. I'm really intrigued by him. The idea that Boba Fett is like, look, if instead of sniping at each other over these hyperspace lanes, you take that one and you take that one, we'll actually, look, I ran the numbers. You'll actually make more money and have less attention from the New Republic and like that kind of thing where they can't change their ways. But like, that of course would be easier, but they won't do it that way.
I really hope we hear Boba Fett, Tamara Morrison saying, I ran the numbers.
I'm not a hunter. I'm an accountant.
Look at these flow charts. Great stuff on that there. This is what I'm actually most intrigued as I was poking around to see if that is a Second City alum character actor as a Twi'lek mayor's assistant. I don't know. We heard, and a lot of the people covering this story out there, and I believe it was Robert Rodriguez that kind of said that the marketing footage we've seen so far is like from the first half of episode one. I think there was even some specific minutes thrown out there, 7 minutes or whatever. But basically, the first half of episode one, that's the TV spots. It's a lot of the pictures have been released. And this is something, Joseph, that we've speculated before, sometimes incorrectly. Force Awakens, I was like, oh, that's all from the first 10 minutes of the movie. they're holding back Luke because he's the hero. He just shows up in the third act. You know, it's fun speculating, but sometimes we went off base. But other times, it's ended up being that's kind of the case. But this is the first time, Joseph, that we've just heard. No, you're getting a couple minutes. Like, you don't even know what's coming. And then, as I was searching for this, this actor, David Pesquesi, I'm probably saying that wrong because he's played so many characters and I don't pay attention to his name. Even on IMDb, which sometimes you can, get some casting or a character, something pops up. The only listed cast is Temuera Morrison, Ming-Na Wen, and Jennifer Beals. That's it. Nothing. Behind the scenes people, below the line, all that stuff, they got some of those, but nothing. So, this actually has me really excited, Joseph. What do we make of this? And do we like this approach? Finally knowing that you're only getting a couple minutes.
Yeah, I love this approach. And whether or not it was Lucasfilm marketing approved, who knows? But I'm totally with you. I will always remember in a very early episode of Force Center that recorded in your bedroom at the time of saying like, yeah, well, this is amazing. They're going to have to release new posters that show stuff that happened in the third act. Very, very wrong. And then basically last year with Mandalorian, I think a lot of us sense that it's only a couple episodes, the early episodes that we're seeing clips from.
Right.
And that panned out. But yeah, there's something about this Boba Fett that almost everything is slightly different clips of what look like potential flashbacks and or Boba Fett business dealings, that same group of hunters that he seems to have a conflict with. So it had been really feeling like this is like the first episode. So then it was the Hollywood Reporter interview with Rodriguez where he said, yep, no, it's anything else would be a spoiler. That's like my favorite quote I've heard from a creator. Not that I don't want insights, but I just love that insight of like, yes, we really want to preserve the fan experience while advertising our show. So enough people watch it. That we got supported from the marketing department to go, yeah, that's great. Hold it back so the actual show can be the thing that really drives the excitement.
It's been fun. It's even been fun since we first learned that this show was a thing, right? It was a post-credit, surprise. And that's just been kind of the mood. And I, for one, keep repeating this idea of like, I'm excited because I don't know what's coming. And the fact that it's like kind of confirmed has me more excited than I thought I would be, because I've been loving the TV spots, been loving what we've been seeing and having fun speculating, which is something we're going to do on the channel later this week. I'm with you. It's just it's exciting. It's fun. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that confirmation that we're only seeing part of the first episode, that makes me think that maybe we are getting some really exciting flashbacks to, Boba's Sarlacc emergence, and they don't want to spoil that. This lack of cast thing, this is really cool that you discovered that, because I had no idea about that. And I think for me, that what I take out of that lack of cast is that there may be some surprises that aren't necessarily that surprising, like maybe Din Djarin or Bo-Katan.
Right.
If this does swing into Book of Boba Fett is Boba Fett's story, but it is also leading into how much does he care about what's going on Mandalore. So I think there's a possibility of some surprises being hidden. I wanted to ask you what you thought about this.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's just that there are a ton of aliens and a lot of the performers are people buried in a Thorian and Aqualish masks or, puppeteering huts or whatever?
I actually think that's a good answer for probably maybe most of the cast not being revealed in a way. Like, I don't disagree with that at all. I think similar to some of the stuff in Mando season one, characters, some actors were recognizable, but they didn't. So from cameos with Brian Posehn to, Horatio Sands being more of a regular character, especially in season two, like that wasn't announced. It just was there and you just kind of had to figure it out until the credits showed up at the end. And I think I could see that happening a lot with this show.
Yeah, that's true too. Like, there's probably a ton of those just like fun cameos. It's not surprise this famous Star Wars character, famous Star Wars actor. It's just like, you know, everybody's, you know, favorite character actor or comedian shows up.
Yeah. It could be that. But I'm with you. It just kind of though make sense with Boba Fett? Like, there'd be a lot of aliens around, right?
I'm, you know, at this point now, taking all of our chatter together and thinking about, I mean, we knew Werner Herzog was going to show up, but, you know, I really hope David Lynch painted himself blue and shows up in a Boba Fett TV show. That would thrill me.
It's finally it. And it's rewarding. I know, it's just kind of rewarding. I was thinking back to Mando, you know, season one, we're all, you know, or season two, episode one, we're all excited about Timothy Oliphant showing up there and Cobb Vanth. And then W. Earl Brown shows up as the Weequay bartender. So it's a Deadwood reunion. And it was there for you if you knew it or not, you know?
Yep. It wasn't a wink, wink, nod, nod. It was just a, hey, this is here and true. Enjoy it if you want.
Enjoy it if you want. So we are almost there. I'm sure there'll be a couple more TV spots. We are going to be getting ready for Book of Boba Fett on the deep dive this week, having fun with some wild speculations, thoughts that will be either proven wrong or very wrong by the time the show comes out. It's part of the fun. Speaking of characters around that Boba Fett world, Han Solo and Chewbacca, they know Boba Fett a little bit. And in March of this coming year, there's going to be a new Marvel comic series focusing on Han and Chewie before A New Hope. This will be written by Mark Guggenheim, drawn by David Messina, and the series will follow Han and Chewie around the underworld a few years before A New Hope. So, you know, smack dab between New Hope and Solo, if you want to look at it that way. Guggenheim talked with StarWars.com about focusing on the tension inside Han, between Han the Cynic and Han the Hopeless Romantic. So let's just start there, Joseph, on that tension and this idea of a comic book going to take us to some key moments in Han and Chewie's life.
Yeah, no, when I saw it announced, I admit I had a little pang of fear for the hope of Solo 2 storytelling.
Yep.
So then when I read that it was happening just a little bit, I don't know, remember exactly how they phrased in the article, but that it was before New Hope, I feel like, okay, well, that leaves some breathing room to maybe tell the fun story. I don't think there's going to be a Solo 2 film, but I would be thrilled if Disney Plus announced, like, yeah, we're going to do a limited series. It's 6 episodes, and it's Han and Chewie's first job for Jabba, with Alden Ehrenreich. Mm-hmm. That was my only resistance to this comic. Otherwise, I'm excited for it.
And you and I have talked a little bit about that with the comics before. We're always honest about that. We love what they put out. There's so many great things. In fact, I have a literal box, cardboard box, in my living room that shipped to me during my trip out to DC with a new batch of Star Wars comics. I'm finally going to get to some of that Crimson Rain stuff that everyone's all excited about. But I kind of have that same reaction of like, whoa, is this where I want the answers? Is this where I want them? Comics, not taking away anyone, anything from anyone who works on those comics. But they said, you said it, this evolves around Jabba, and we're doing some jobs for Jabba. Greedo will be involved. Yeah, makes some sort of sense that maybe they all knew each other. And more characters found in the comics, whether that's an Aphra or something like that, we don't know. Saint Astaros, they could be appearing. And some surprises that, quote, no one will see coming. Does that add to your worries? And I know your worries are small, Joseph, but does it add to those worries? Or what do you think about even who knows who could show up here?
Yeah, no, I'm always excited about the fun who knows who could show up. I think for me, that's always I have a lot of trust in the general Lucasfilm editorial team that make sure that there is elbow room for the right kind of thing. I'm happy that there aren't, you know, I know Kira has been popping up in the comics a bunch at a different part of the timeline. I just want to leave a little bit of that post-Solo time free. I also think I'm excited about this because of the actual writer, Mark Guggenheim. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with any of his comics work, but he's one of the co-creators, producers, writers on CW's Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow, which is two shows that I've really, really enjoyed. That have great sort of genre connections to Star Wars. So the idea of who the writer is, is exciting to me. And I think the big thing for me, Ken, is not just the talking about what I fear, but talking about what I love.
Yeah.
Getting away from that fear of don't step on the Solo possibilities. The fact that it's closer to New Hope is actually really intriguing to me, because it's always fun to see down on his luck Han just barely making it through. It's always fun to see Chewie, you know, helping him on whatever wild thing he's doing. But what I would be hopeful for in this comic is seeing some victories, right? Because the original trilogy is predicated on the idea that he was the best. And I'm sure he was the best in a sloppy, it almost didn't happen way. But I don't believe that's sarcasm from Jabba. I don't believe Jabba's given him a second chance out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah.
I believe Han was the best at, you know, being a smuggler, a scoundrel, you know, whatever assignment he needed. And I would love to see some of that, of Han making making some rash choices, but coming out a big winner in Jabba's eyes.
I love that. I'm right there with you on that. This idea of Han the cynic, Han the hopeless romantic, which is, you know, this constant battle that we love to see in Han. We love to see it analyzed. We love to kind of check in on that in Han's life, right? Where is he this week? But I love what you're saying, because that would be, you're talking about what Jabba, what Greedo says Jabba's saying about him. And just the obsession Jabba has for Han later on, and his favorite decoration, like all of it. I grew up just knowing that Han, when they walk into that cantina, Han was the best. He was the best.
Yeah,
that's the, what was set up. That's what you grew up with. And we've got to spend some wonderful time with him early on. Solo ending with him and Chewie punching it and going to light speed to have this lifetime of adventures in front of him. I do want to see them a little bit at the top of their game. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a fun thing with that is, like, obviously, this interview with Mark Guggenheim is great, and that's what gives me a lot of confidence, the way he talks about that constant tension of Han between being the hopeless romantic and the hard-bitten cynic, and that there is always room for him to play with those things. But the idea that, you know, by the time we catch up with him in A New Hope, you know, he leans into the cynic, and the angel's always there on his shoulder. The hopeless romantic's always kind of whispering in his ear. So that's a really intriguing. But in particular for me, it's this idea of what is Han thinking about the future at this point? Like a couple of years between A New Hope. Is he just like, this is great, I made it? Or is he starting to think about that? Hey, Chewie, just land this one more job and then I'll take you back to Kashyyyk. Not that Kashyyyk's a pleasant place to live, but then we can do it. You know, what are Han and Chewie thinking about their future right now?
Yeah, and some great stuff in that interview about Chewie kind of maybe being a little bit of that older, wiser, you know, Han, what are you doing type of stuff. I'm paraphrasing that. But what we hope to see and maybe learn about Han and Chewie during this time, what you're saying about Han getting these victories, top of his game, does that cement things in his brain? Do we meet him here going, that hopeless romantic, it's long gone. That does not lead to success. But what's leading to me to this life that I love is I'm doing good at it. And therefore he cares a little less. And then that sets up, you know, not cares less, but sets up New Hope to be that kind of jolt, and Leia and Luke and the cause and the rebellion just coming to the forefront of his story there, being right in front of him, where he can't ignore it anymore, where maybe he'd gotten good at ignoring it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's intriguing about exactly how to handle that, because you could tell the story of he'd gotten good at ignoring it, or he could have the experience where he's been cocky, right? Where if this story is Jabba gives him an assignment and there's a part of it that the hopeless romantic in him says, don't do that. And he gets away with, you know, helping somebody, saving somebody, but still somehow comes up a winner in Jabba's eyes. And he's just getting cocky about, I don't have to choose.
Yeah.
You know, and then A New Hope is a situation where, like, as much as he claims he's a cynic, he's just out for number one. Now he's in this position where it's just like, let him die in that suicide run on the Death Star, or turn around. It's one or the other. It's A or B. You can't thread the needle.
Yeah. And then Chewie says, let me tell you something. I've sat here silently. Remember when you left Enfys Nest? Remember that?
Remember.
Maybe. Yeah. Because I made reference to that fantasy conversation in my head. Maybe this all leads to a, you know, jump to that moment. I want a series that goes into New Hope, and you just have the private conversations with Han and Chewie.
What if Chewie's just giving him the silent treatment? Not a single roar.
Yeah. All right. I hear what you're saying. You're not saying anything, but I hear it loud and clear.
Yeah. So I'm excited for this one.
Yeah. I am too. And even if there was a couple seconds, I'm with you on that. Like, okay. But
how are you feeling about that kind of tease in the article of like, oh, there'll be some surprises, but there's a real tease of like somebody's going to show up at the end of issue one that you'd never expect. How are you feeling about that?
I am positively ambivalent. Does that make any sense? I think it could be taken too general as a blanket statement for a lot of the comics. There's a lot of that in the comics and yeah. has been for a bit, even with characters you don't know. The infamous debut of Sanastaros as Han Solo's ex-wife. And remember in 2014, that was the biggest controversy ever. Like, oh my gosh. She's this wonderful character now, but you know, there's always been, it's how comics work. Get yep. you back for next month. So, I am excited to see who it is. I just, at this point, unless it's like Boss Nass or Jar Jar, I don't know if I can be surprised.
He can't be bothered to be excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I like the cliffhangers. I like how much in this interview he's selling them. It's like, yeah, no, they're cliffhangers because for me, it is part of that pulpy adventure serial mm-hmm. tradition of Star Wars. I was thinking about it a little bit, and I think the person who would surprise and delight me is Val, because I want Val to have secretly survived.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I like that a lot, too. There's a lot of choices.
There you go. Val and Jar Jar are working together. That's what we figured out.
Because Jar Jar's, according to Aftermath, he's out and about, so maybe he stumbles onto this Han guy. We'll see. Final news story of the week. As always, there's a lot of things out there, interviews, rumors, dive on in. There's a great thing with Jennifer Beals getting talking about learning more about her character from Dave Filoni, but we only cover a couple things on these segments. And this final one was just plain fun. Actually, a lot of Force Center listeners tweeted us or posted this in Discord and wanted us to address him. Return of the Jedi will now forever be part of history. That's because Return of the Jedi will join A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back in the National Film Registry. Return of the Jedi received the most public votes of over 6,000 movies up for inclusion. 25 go in. Every time they do these votes, New Hope went in 1989, Empire 2010. But Return of the Jedi will finally take its place in this important registry here. It helps preserve the actual films and just the legacy. So let's talk about the thoughts and our thoughts on the legacy of Return of the Jedi. That's probably an entire episode, but now that it's in the forefront, what do you think?
Yeah, yeah. And I want to paraphrase Vader and say, and now the success is complete. Yeah, it's great. It really makes sense to me. I think... I'm thinking about the legacy of Return of the Jedi as its own film, mm-hmm. but then also as the third chapter in a story and really remembering back to the landscape in which it was made, where a sequel was always just the same film title and a number. And it was often the same thing again, not three parts of one story. Right. Mm-hmm. That's much more common now. But just the idea of, well, if you're going to preserve A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, of course you should preserve Return of the Jedi. So in a way, it's the celebration of the legacy that this is one story, you know, and those three films are only one part of the story, you know?
Yeah, there's something, there's a big giant, I don't know, justification for Return of the Jedi and those Ewoks and the happy ending and all those kind of things that we just kind of grew up with, and just saying, no, these three films, this one story. I love the way you phrase that. Return of the Jedi is a favorite for so many. And in truth is why I'm at the party. That was the first party I went to and really experienced and remembered. So it, not that I need my childhood validated by this list or anything, or that the film needed this for any validation, but it does count. Gives me a little warm fuzzies for that wonderful episode 6.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, just looking at Return of the Jedi itself as a film and the history of filmmaking, not only it being the concluding chapter of a trilogy that's all one story, but the film itself, the accomplishment of Jabba, right?
Yeah.
The speeder bike chase, continuing to push forward the way that special effects are used in films. And for me, in terms of the legacy, I think the biggest thing is, we've talked about it so much, but the idea of a character like Luke thinking for two films, I need to become a warrior, and then realizing, no, I really need to become the best person I can be.
Yeah.
And this is about laser swords and saving the galaxy, but it's also just about, like, giving my horrible dad who made 1,000 bad mistakes one more chance. And that's how I save the galaxy, because I gave my horrible dad one more chance, you know, in a mythic sense. And obviously Luke sensed that there was still good in him.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that, you know, everybody should always give their horrible parents another chance, because maybe sometimes not. But I talked myself into a corner there. But you know what I mean? Of just the idea that Luke triumphed through empathy and pacifism, and that is the story of this trilogy, is really powerful. And I think worthy of being validated.
Yeah, validated and locked in the history vaults together. The collection is complete.
Yeah.
You know, now we'll see if the National Film Registry looks towards Phantom Menace.
That will be a very interesting conversation. And if anybody's interested, I can't remember where I read it, to full honesty, but there is interesting discussion about what's literally being preserved, because as beautiful and as nice as this is, it's opened up the old, are they the original films, or is Lucasfilm handing over the updated special editions, that a can of Star Wars worms is being reopened.
Yes, absolutely. That's a hot button debate that we can all have. The McClunky of it all. We'll see. We'll update this story when The Phantom Menace finally makes its way to the National Film Registry, which, you know, quite frankly, because of the leaps it made with technology and Best Charger, it would rightfully belong, I think. But that's something we'll get to on Force Center 5000.
Look forward to recording.
Yes. That is a look at Star Wars news for now. Before we take a quick break and get to the questions, we have our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
We are recommending The Rising Storm by Kevin Scott. Very soon we'll tick over into the new year, and there will be a flood of new High Republic books. This is the big second chapter in the adult novelizations. So if you're interested, or novels, not novelizations, novels. So if you're interested in checking out an audiobook of The Rising Storm by Kevin Scott, you can, of course, do that.
Download that today by getting your free audiobook at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. I cannot wait for that new High Republic gauntlet. But when you said that, Joseph, I just I did one of those, like, oh, all right, here we go. It's game time. We got to
We got some books to read. It's going to be exciting.
Books are on the way. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we've got your questions here on ForceCenter.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more
and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to 4Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. Episode 384 is the current number that you're listening to. In what we call our seventh season that we've been broadcasting since 2015, we are about to turn the page and get into our eighth season of broadcasting. We're renewed for one more, all right? Got it. Joseph, some great questions today. What do we got?
Yeah, we got two questions from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we're going to go first to Twitter, and this is a person with the handle Chubby Gamer. Chubby Gamer says, I almost just said Chubby like it's a first name. Chubby Gamer says, if the original trilogy were made today, who would play Luke, Han, and Leia? Mm. That is that's a fun, complicated one. Ken, did you get some time to think about it?
I did. And I'm going to give an answer I've given on other programs when sometimes I get asked this question. I've been asked on an older show is on and just in general. I don't think my answer is you wouldn't know them. And almost to the point of I'm not love this question, Chubby, by the way. I'm not grumpy about this at all. I just really feel if they're doing this again, I mean, you know. Look at Force Awakens, John Boyega, maybe some of you knew him from Attack the Block. Maybe not a lot. You know, Oscar
Isaac. Around with the 13th Doctor and Attack the Block. Yep.
Yep. There you go. Oscar Isaac. Yeah, he was known. But even then it was like, wait, he inside Llewellyn Davis guy. Is that the guy? And then, as we all know, Daisy Ridley and her one headshot was the only thing we had for a long time. And that lines up with the original trilogy, perhaps more than the prequels. There was more known actors playing the roles there. I just think it kind of works, and I think that's what I would want. And so it's more of not me skirting the question or just not having an answer. And I don't keep up with a ton of young actors. I don't know. Throw Tom Holland in there. He seems to be doing things. he can be Luke or Han. I don't care at this point. But it's not that I don't care. I just really think that's the magic of it. And even Harrison Ford being the one dude from that one movie who's a carpenter now. Like, it all kind of, and even that was almost too known for George, as we all know. I just would want that spirit to be. I wouldn't want the names. I wouldn't want to know.
Yeah. No, I mean, my first answer is exactly the same as you. I wrote down total unknowns.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because I agree with you. I think that there is something about the spirit of that first film, that first trilogy, that does have a magic to it, because for the most part, people encounter that movie is like, that's who these people are, right? Mm-hmm. Not that great actors can't make you forget who they are and all that kind of thing. And we're just, I love that we have so many beloved performers in modern times, but I also want there to be room for discoveries, right? I think it's also just, it's a little bit in the spirit of Star Wars to me that, like, that kind of everybody matters. You don't have to already have been famous.
Yeah.
To maybe, you know, get your first shot because of something as huge and important as Star Wars ended up being, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, like when they signed on, none of those big three were like, all right, and my career is made, right?
No.
They didn't know how that movie was going to turn out. It was a risk. So I'm with you. I would want unknowns. But then I felt guilty and I came up with some other answers. so I came up with two sets of answers. One, just kind of a knee jerk, immediate thing I thought, I try to be mindful of age for the most part. But with Leia, I just went to, you know, Billy Lord.
Yeah.
You know, I think she'd be able to capture that Leia spirit for obvious reasons. Han, call me bonkers, Ken, but I went with Alden Ehrenreich. I think that kid would do a good job. Is Han Solo.
You're just going for hot takes, villain. I love it.
I'm trying to get as many clicks as possible. Yeah. And then you already spoiled it for me. Tom Holland, I actually think, would make a great Luke Skywalker, right?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he could play Luke with a British accent. That would be very different. That would be exciting and fun. Or he can do the American accent. No, I think for me, it is one of the reasons that I really love the MCU Spider-Man, Tom Holland's performance. We need those heroes who can play utter tragedy, who can play fury and pain and anger, but are just radiating at their core. Like, I am a nice guy. Like, I mean, when I think of my favorite, one of my very favorite Luke Skywalker lines in A New Hope of Mark Hamill saying, "I care," like Tom Holland can communicate that energy at his core, that I care.
Love it.
Yeah. And then I also thought, I think, honestly, I would also like to see a more diversity in casting and not just assume that. So my final three picks, if you're going, past the obvious of Billy Lord and Alden Ehrenreich, there's an actor named Aaron Westbrook who plays a character named Tabitha on Riverdale. And I think she's just got this great she's got this great strength and this great intelligence that is Leia, this great sense of being in command, but also a good sense of humor. So I thought she'd be great for Leia. For Luke, I went to Shameik Moore, who is the voice of Miles Morales in the Spider-Verse animated film. But he's also the main star of Dope by Rick Famuyiwa, who we both have loved on The Mandalorian. I watched Dope specifically because, like, I loved his episodes on Mandalorian. I want to go check something out. And it's a real coming of age story. It's very different trappings than Star Wars, but it's got those coming of age connections. I think he'd be great as Luke. And then finally, for Han, I was trying to think of, like, well, Han's a little older. Who's somebody in their 30s who could play a little bit of that rogue and that scoundrel, but still has that heart of gold? And this is a little different than the kind of roles he's played, but I think he could do it. We know him already from Star Wars casting, but I think Riz Ahmed would make a good Han Solo.
Ooh, that's a great one. I love that idea.
So you don't think I'm in dangerous hot take territory with Riz Ahmed as Han Solo?
No, you know Alden, who burned the house down, which, by the way, that would probably be my choice too. No, Riz Ahmed, because you'd have to assume that, you know, Rogue One doesn't exist in this parallel universe.
Yeah,
right. So this multiverse of casting. I love him. I really do. And love to find a way to get the early days of Bodhi Rook back in Star Wars anyways. That's a great choice.
Yeah, I just think he's one of those actors who just has such great range, and a lot of the roles that we've seen him in, particularly if you know him mostly from Rogue One, you know him as a little bit more of a somebody who's trying to push past his fear and an everyman, but he's just such a great actor. I feel like he could play that swagger that's covering up the heart of gold.
Love it. Well, see, you've done better than I here. I just got on my grumpy. I don't follow a lot of actors these days. Horse, but
you just got off a plane, and you got off a plane with an honest answer in your heart, which was my first answer to total unknowns. It was only my guilt and my compulsion. That's great. That made me come up with two other sets.
I just, when other shows back in the day would be like, all right, name someone who should play this role. I'd be like, I don't know. I don't, just cast someone and I'll probably enjoy them. I don't know.
Yeah. The person who the creators feel is best at, capturing who the person is.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to move on then to our next question from Felice Afra. Felice Afra asks, would you like to see Rey coming back to Jakku to interrogate Angkor Plot about the day her parents left? That is some great, vivid headcanon that's flashing through my mind. My short answer is yes. Where are you at, Ken?
Yes, with an exclamation point. This is a great question. And one of those, like a bar or a playground or hanging around with friends, Star Wars kind of discussion, the fun kind, where just like, this isn't a plot hole in the movie, you know, and it's just, this is a fun kind of headcanon question. And yes, now would she interrogate him or go back and calmly talk to him and kind of try to find stuff out and have a conversation, maybe bring back portions to him? I don't know. Would he be receptive? I would hope so. But that's the way I would say I could see, you know, Ray at emotionally to go back, not to put a lightsaber up to Unkar Plutz, but he might deserve it. He might deserve it. But yeah, this actually makes a lot of sense to me. That if she's putting together the story, if she feels she needs to, maybe she doesn't. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's made a choice and she's happy where she is. She's Rey Skywalker and doesn't need to turn around. I get that. But maybe at some point she does. So yeah, exclamation point on that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued by this because I honestly feel like it could maybe even be a comic or novel. Because I feel like they're in this place with the sequel trilogy characters of like, obviously a lot of people would love to see more stories, but like, how do you tell stories while still kind of leaving the door open for what if 10 years from now they all want to get back together? And this is one that makes sense to be like, okay, well, this is a story that we could tell because it is mostly about her kind of taking those next steps toward the future of putting her past in context so she can move forward. So that's really thrilling to me. I think in my headcanon, Rey's trip to Tatooine at the end of Rise of Skywalker is part of a larger pilgrimage. You know?
Yes. Right. Yes.
I think she has flown out to the remains of Alderaan. I think she's maybe visited Dagobah. I think she is, you know, spent a little bit more time just meditating on Ajin Kloss. I think that there is a real, like, I am trying to honor and put into context the lives of these people who've meant so much to me. Right.
Yeah.
And ends up at Tatooine is the right place to bury the sabers alongside with the Skywalker matriarch of Shmi, right?
Yeah.
But that idea of like, is this part of that pilgrimage, or is it like that was my pilgrimage to say thank you and goodbye to the Skywalkers, even though they'll always be with me? And next up, this much harder pilgrimage of do I want to do this because I know it'll give me closure, but is it just gonna rip open old wounds, right? And that it's so fascinating because it's a good complex journey for a character like Rey.
The journals of Rey, like the new journals, because there's been some journals of Rey, hasn't there? there's some real interesting and powerful where she is at the end of that journey, and I'm with you too. That I don't think that was just a day trip out to Tatooine.
No, I don't think that was just a quick bop. I think there was a lot of heart and thought in it. Yeah, the other thing about this that's interesting to me about her first steps, she's clearly taken the time. She's made her blade. She is thinking about the meaning of it. She has given lots of thought, all of her experience of what does it mean to be a Jedi, you know, and she has read those books cover to cover. And she's charting her path. So the other intriguing thing to me about this is like, okay, if I went back to Jakku because I need to face my past so it doesn't become, you know, this thing that haunts me, and I need to hear about my parents from people who meant them. It's like, okay, so while I'm here as a Jedi, and I know Unkar Plot has a unjust system where he hoards food.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And uses it to starve people to work for him. Should I just lightly do something about that? You know, like I like the idea that like I'm here on Jakku to bust up your unjust system and redistribute, you know, the food portions.
Yeah.
And while I'm here, because you don't have a say in that, I'm taking apart your business on Unkar Plot. And while I'm here, do you want to talk to me about my parents?
I really like this idea. Portions for everyone. Just starts throwing them around. First round on me. No, that would track. That would track for where Rey is as a Jedi and as someone who wants to not destroy the past, heal the past, and heal and grow from the past. Yeah.
Yeah. Healing the Past, a journal by Rey Skywalker.
That's my portions.
We joke, but this is yes. The answer to this question is a resounding yes. That's a great, a great story, a great idea, and hopefully we'll hear more Rey stories in the future, either the near future or the far future. We're going to move on now to questions from patrons on Patreon. First up is Adam Knight. Adam says, "What's the over under of an Omega reference in the Book of Boba Fett Moreover, what kind of blowback will we have within the community if we don't get a reference to Fett's quote-unquote sister that we will never know even existed prior to 6 months ago? Keep up the great work, Force Center team. Smiley face. Adam always asks great questions, poking some good fun at the way that we can react as a community of sometimes wanting more things connected to lore, sometimes getting frustrated because things are too connected. It's sometimes hard to get the Star Wars porridge to just the right lore temperature. So, Ken, where do you go with this? Do you think that there's going to be a reference to Omega? Do you want one?
I want a reference to, I was going to say an O reference to Omega. Omega, I want one. I really want one. I don't think we're going to get one. I don't know why. I think Filoni, if he's involved in any way, he's always going to look at the salad bar and see what toppings he can put on his salad for us all to enjoy. So it wouldn't be, it's not a giant leap to think that it would that she would be referenced in some way. I just think it seems like be jumping the gun a little bit on it because that might be the Bad Batch, you know, that's Bad Batch's story to tell in a way. And I think you and I are of the hope, not necessarily the opinion, the hope that a young Boba Fett shows up in Bad Batch. It just, that makes a lot of sense to me. So I'd maybe be willing to wait for the answer over there as opposed to here.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a Boba Fett monologue on his sister. definitely not. And there's a great Temuera Morrison quote of like, you know, we're opening up the can and Boba Fett's got a lot of answers about his past. Some of them very short, some of them very long.
Yes.
Which I still think is maybe Temuera Morrison's reaction as an actor of like, you gave me a lot of long monologues to memorize.
Yes.
But who knows? I think that I trust Filoni to handle this well, and Rodriguez and Favreau and all of the showrunners and writers of Bad Batch as well. If I had to guess, I would think that there isn't going to be a reference. But if it is, I think it would be something really cryptic, right? Mm-hmm. I think it would be something like, you know, if somebody asked Boba Fett, you know, have you had family? And he said, I've had some, you know.
Yeah.
Family. Yeah, a few. There's something that just kind of leaves the door open and feels like a really a great nod to those of us who are excitedly watching Bad Batch and are excited for the second season and hoping for more about the connection between Omega and Boba Fett. I think the important thing to me is whatever is going to happen in season two of Bad Batch, it is well and truly known at Lucasfilm, right?
Yeah.
Because of the schedule that animation is on. So they could be teeing up something with a cryptic reference that we might see in season two.
And I'd be a big fan of that idea. Yeah, and you're right. It wasn't it Bad Batch's version of Fennec Shand was probably in the design, design halls sooner than the live action.
Yeah,
just the way it is. But yeah, that actually kind of worked for something that you go back and go, oh, it was right there in front of us the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. And in terms of the kind of blowback, you know, Adam's having some fun, I think, asking the question in a jokey way of, like I said, sometimes people want more connection, sometimes people want less connection. Yeah. I think the thing for me is, for Bad Batch Season 2, wanting to see Boba Fett kind of complete his arc, get into from being a young bounty hunter to get into the armor and really stake his claim on in that part of the timeline, being the baddest of the bounty hunters. I really want that, not just because I want familiar characters. I continue to just be really interested in the relationship between Boba Fett and Omega because they sounds like they're both relatively unaltered clones. That's what we've always been told about Boba. That seems to be what is being told to us about Omega. And it's not that I want Boba Fett and Omega to like meet and talk because it'd be you know, cool. It's that I want them to handle that relationship because it sheds light on how they feel about their own identities of, you know, what does it mean to be a clone? And it sheds more light on just the idea of what does it mean to be a clone in general. It's such a powerful Star Wars idea about what makes you who you are. And the idea of found family and different versions of family being, you know, legitimate, you know, everything from Rey being a Skywalker to Han and Chewie being, you know, each other's, you know, person, even in all the other relationships they have, they're that unit of two, that family of two. And I'm really interested in it, not for the, lore, not for the any sort of nostalgia pop, but for what it could tell us about who they are.
Yes, and I know we're going to discuss it as we dive in a little bit more, getting ready for Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett, but how much of his clone-ness is dealt with in the show is still a big mystery to me. But it's also very, very, very key. It's very important. And I don't think they're going to leave that off the table for too long in content around Boba Fett.
Yeah. Yeah. Regardless of exactly how Boba Fett feels about it, it's one of his key nouns.
It is. But I do, you're kind of indirectly pitching a sitcom that we could have of Boba and Omega. Like a theme song of he's the alpha, she's the omega, the clones from Kamino.
Yep, I would absolutely happily watch The Fets at Home.
Yeah.
Great, great sitcom. Yeah. All right, any other thoughts before we move on to our final question?
Oh, great one, Adam.
All right, we'll move on then to our question from Kyle Bratt. Kyle says, no one delivers exposition like Rick Olier. I love his wonderfully clunky dialogue explaining to Anakin and the audience the world of Coruscant. It got me thinking about any scenes that could perhaps benefit from a little bit of Olier magic.
Yes.
After watching The Rise of Skywalker for the first time, I was ready for a fun discussion with some friends. But before we got into the bold creative decisions, my friend said, you realize that was Mustafar in the opening scene, right? And I was shocked. I hadn't recognized the planet. How could I have missed it? Then I imagined Rick Olier somehow returning. Maybe piloting one of those TIE fighters in the opening shot and explaining to his wingman and the audience that it was Mustafar they were flying over. The entire planet is one big volcano. I wonder how many casual fans watched the movie and didn't realize it was the same planet from films past and how Olier could have remedied this. This is all a long way of asking that if you could insert Rick Olier into any scene in any Star Wars, regardless of where in the timeline, to utter a line of exposition, maybe including a detail known by you from the wider canon sources, where would you place him? What would he say? And why? This is a very, very fun question. Just celebrating the exposition of Rick Olier. Where do you go with this, Ken?
Look, first of all, I will say I did not immediately think Mustafar in Rise of Skywalker. I went, that planet's kind of like Mustafar. Never thought that it would be until a couple moments later. So I'm with you there on that whole thing, Kyle. This is a great thing. I love this. And I, so Joseph, I kind of was like, where do I need Rick Olier's help? And like, where do I feel, just whether or not I have more of the answers now, where at the time was I like, wait a second. So I might put him somewhere in The Force Awakens. Mm. And there was always that kind of thought of, hey, we love Force Awakens, but the state of the galaxy, the state of the politics of the galaxy, maybe we could have got a little bit more of that, but hey, we understand why they didn't, right? But that's always been the conversation. That was definitely a conversation 2015 into 2016. But there were some moments where I needed to, maybe wanted to have it put together a little bit more. Not saying the film needed it, but me as a fan was like, oh, I wish I knew that a little bit more. And I think Rick Olier would come in there where he'd be saying, you know, things about like, well, the New Republic has deemed Leia a warmonger. They're not on our side. We had to form our own resistance. Akbar came out of retirement, like all those kind of things.
Yeah.
Would be great.
Yeah, and like the crawl says that the resistance acting kind of on the behalf of the Republic, right? I don't remember, yeah. But it's like it feels like the New Republic's kind of like, yeah, I mean, we don't want an army, but we're going to kind of look the other way, and we will, you know, receive your emissary Corsella to try to talk us into being all the way on board with this. Yeah, if Rick Olier was just at that meeting where they're planning what to do with the Starkiller base and just explaining.
Yeah.
To somebody beside him, maybe a Sergeant Salty Sharp,
yes.
The salt taster from The Last Jedi, explaining to them the state of the galaxy. And he's yeah. Like, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah. That'd be good.
See, the First Order had control of some space, but everybody just thought they'd stay there. But now they're expanding. Like, oh, okay.
God. Yeah. Or, you know, they bring up. Bring up the hologram of Starkiller Base, and Rick Olier just goes, that's Ilum.
The Jedi used to get their crystals there. Same thing that powered the Death Star, which this is similar to, but larger.
Yeah. they decided to go right to the planet because the Death Star, the first one, took long to build because they're having problems with the kyber crystals.
But the second one, they'd worked it all out and they had the kyber crystals already, and I guess they just did it much faster.
That's where I would have needed him.
Yeah, I think my mind just started going everywhere. And so the first place my mind went is it would be great if we could just hire the actor, Ralph Brown, to do in-character commentary for every Star Wars film, like the old director's commentary, but just as Rick Ollier, just every time that anything came on the screen, just saying what it is in one detail about it. Dagobah, very muddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I need that, actually. I love Ralph Brown. I mean, since Wayne's World 2 and his Brown M&M story. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. How do we make that happen?
I would love that.
Looking at you, Disney Plus. Yeah.
And then I thought of two other concrete examples. One being, I would love it if his spirit was somehow haunting Ahch-To. Not implying Rick Ollier is a Jedi, but if he was just like, because there are so many little just Easter eggs, right? He's like, oh, Luke got that compass in the video game. Probably shouldn't say in the video game Battlefront 2, but maybe he would. He got that on that planet. I'm spacing the name of the planet where Luke got the compass. Bilio. I was going to say Scipio, and I knew that was wrong, but it is an EO. That Luke got that compass from the Emperor's vault on Bilio. Yeah. Hey, that necklace has got a shattered Sith kyber crystal on it. And then like... You know, the nutritional benefits of thalassiren milk are really great. You can go 2 days just on one pint.
This is great. I love this.
Yeah. So many things to point out on Ahch-To.
Yeah.
And then, Ken, my favorite thing in nature documentaries is it first happened to me, and I think the first Planet Earth, where you're watching like 7 episodes straight where David Attenborough is the, you know, narrator, somehow knows everything about the life of every insect, every, you know, mammal, every whale that is encountered. And then eventually you get to a moment where David Attenborough says, like, those monkeys attacked each other and we don't know why. And it's so terrifying because if David Attenborough doesn't know, nobody does. So I would like to see Rick Ollier in Saw's hideout and just pointing at the Borgullet and just being like, I don't know what that is or what it does. I don't know how it works, kids.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. I think, how about this? Can we just get Ralph Brown to do the audio, the audible versions of the visual dictionaries?
Oh, that would be really, really great.
Yeah.
Or since we're making Ray's journal, we could make Rick's journal too. And it's just like these absolute short childlike sentences.
Yes.
Just basic descriptions of things. I had lunch. It was a sandwich. Half of it was made of meat.
That was a shock meat. Look, here's the thing. It's like George R. R. Martin, you know, anytime he writes one of his own history books, it's some unknown new maester character that's telling you the story, and it's really effective. So I think he could be, along with Beaumont Kin, they can switch off.
We got to shout out Beaumont because he took a lot of the expositional weight off of old Rick Ollier's shoulders in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, that's amazing. Great stuff. That's great.
Absolutely great. Very fun question, Kyle. And my final thought, poor Mustafar. The next time it's in a film, it needs to be made very clear since it didn't get its label in Rogue One or didn't get clarified in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, it deserves it. Maybe, you know, welcome to Mustafar, just a sign as you enter into the territories there.
Yeah, a blinking sign in space that says, welcome to Mustafar. I think that would be great. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Felice and Chubby Gamer, for your great questions. That's it for the questions, Ken.
That is it. I want to let you know where you can find us. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well, where we rebroadcast audio versions of our show there. No faces, just our audio.
That's our promise to you. That's no faces.
Yeah. Dark Science, Cloning, Secrets Only the Sith Knew. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are available on a lot of different spots. We made the big switch to Acast. You can check us out there. Or you can go to iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other places. Some more coming soon. Once I, kind of shake the cobwebs of travel off of me, I'll be working on adding us to some spots there as well. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can get to our Discord if you want to have a great conversation where you celebrate Star Wars every day with the Force Center friends there. You can follow me at Kat Knapsack or go to my website, kenknapsack.com. From there, you can find out things I do. And, you know, Joseph, it's just kind of, this is the way we close the show, and sometimes we do it on autopilot. It was every person from Force Center land who came to the comedy show was like, oh, I heard you talking about it at the end of the show. So, hey, thanks for listening to the end of the show.
The system works. I so love it when a system works.
Yeah, be good on my website when I start adding shows for 2022. Joseph, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. I am having fun, as always, making some jokes and in particular sharing some short videos about the action figures that I don't open. Many of them, most of them, Star Wars action figures. You can also check out all of my other comedy adventures, old comedy albums, shows, books, all that kind of thing on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
Check it out. Check it out. All right. Big look ahead. Not quite a preview, just a fun, exciting guessing game / getting ready for Boba Fett coming your way here on the show. We got the Clone Wars Report, Star Wars Rank Special Christmas Morning Edition coming your way. It's a big week. And as we get ready for a big year in Star Wars, thank you all for the support. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.